cities he visited, Hamburg, had suffered roughly the same number of casualties as Nagasaki, and had lost an even greater proportion of housing. A series of Allied bombing raids had killed about 3.3% of Hamburg's population and destroyed about half of its homes. Nevertheless, Ikle found, the people of Hamburg were resilient. They had not fled the city in panic. They'd tried to preserve the familiar routines of daily life and now seemed determined to rebuild houses, businesses, and stores at their original locations. A city readjusts to destruction somewhat as a living organism responds to injury, Ikle later noted. After returning to the United States, Ikle wrote a doctoral thesis that looked at the relationship between the intensity of aerial bombing and the density of a city's surviving population. The proponents of air power, he suggested, had overestimated its lethal effects. Before the Second World War, British planners had assumed that for every metric ton of high-explosive bombs dropped on a city, about 72 people would be killed or injured. The actual rate turned out to be only 15 to 20 casualties per ton, and the Royal Air Force strategy of targeting residential areas and de-housing civilians proved disappointing. The supply of urban housing was much more elastic than expected, as people who still had homes invited their homeless friends, neighbors, and family members to come and stay. Ikle devised a simple formula to predict how crowded the houses of a bombed-out city might become. If P1 equals the population of a city before destruction, P2 equals the population of a city after destruction, H1 equals the number of housing units before destruction, H2 equals the number of housing units after destruction, and F equals the number of fatalities, then the fully compensating increase in housing density could be expressed as a mathematical equation. P1 minus F over H2 minus P1 over H1. Ikle was impressed by the amount of urban hardship and overcrowding that people could endure. But there were limits. The tipping point seemed to be reached when about 70% of a city's homes were destroyed. That's when people began to leave en masse and seek shelter in the countryside. Ikle's dissertation attracted the attention of the Rand Corporation, and he was soon invited to join its social sciences division. Created in 1946 as a joint venture of the Army Air Forces and the Douglas Aircraft Company, Project Rand became one of America's first think tanks, a university without students where scholars and Nobel laureates from a wide variety of disciplines could spend their days contemplating the future of air power. The organization gained early support from General Curtis LeMay, whose training as a civil engineer had greatly influenced his military thinking. LeMay wanted the nation's best civilian minds to develop new weapons, tactics, and technologies for the Army Air Forces. Rand's first study, preliminary design of an experimental world-circling spaceship, outlined the military importance of satellites more than a decade before one was launched. Rand subsequently conducted pioneering research on game theory, computer networking, artificial intelligence, systems analysis, and nuclear strategy. Having severed its ties to Douglas Aircraft, Rand became a non-profit corporation operating under an exclusive contract to the Air Force. At the Rand headquarters in Santa Monica, California, not far from the beach, amid a freewheeling intellectual atmosphere where no idea seemed too outlandish to explore, physicists, mathematicians, economists, sociologists, psychologists, computer scientists, and historians collaborated on top-secret studies. Behind the whole enterprise lay a profound faith in the application of science and reason to warfare. The culture of the place was rigorously unsentimental. Analysts at Rand were encouraged to consider every possibility calmly, rationally, and without emotion, to think about the unthinkable in defense of the United States. While immersed in a number of projects at Rand, Fred Ikle continued to study what happens when cities are bombed. His book on the subject, The Social Impact of Bomb Destruction, appeared in 1958. It included his earlier work on the devastation of Hamburg and addressed the question of how urban populations would respond to nuclear attacks. Eclet warned that far more thought was being devoted to planning a nuclear war than to preparing for the aftermath of one. It is not a pleasant task to deal realistically with such potentially large-scale and gruesome destruction, Eclet wrote in the preface. But since we live in the shadow of nuclear warfare, we must face its consequences intelligently and prepare to cope with them. Relying largely on statistics, excluding any moral or humanitarian considerations, and writing with cool Swiss precision, Eclet suggested that the Second World War strategy of targeting civilians had failed to achieve its aims. The casualties were disproportionately women, children, and the elderly, not workers essential to the war effort. Cities adapted to the bombing, and their morale wasn't easily broken. Even in Hiroshima, the desire to fight back survived the blast. When rumors spread that San Francisco, San Diego, and Los Angeles had been destroyed by Japanese atomic bombs, people became light-hearted and cheerful, hoping the war could still be won. A nuclear exchange between the United States and the Soviet Union, however, would present a new set of dilemmas. The first atomic bomb to strike a city might not be the only one. Fleeing to the countryside and remaining there might be the logical thing to do. Eclet conjured a nightmarish vision of ongoing nuclear attacks, millions of casualties, firestorms, the sheer terror of the enormous destruction, friction between rural townspeople and urban refugees, victims of radiation sickness anxiously waiting days or weeks to learn if they'd received a fatal dose. It was naive to think that the only choice Americans now faced was one world or none. Nuclear weapons might never be abolished, and their use might not mean the end of mankind. Eclet wanted people to confront the threat of nuclear war with a sense of realism, not utopianism or apocalyptic despair. A nation willing to prepare for the worst might survive, in some form or another. Eclet had spent years contemplating the grim details of how America's cities could be destroyed. His interest in the subject was more than academic. He had a wife and two young daughters. If the war plans of the United States or the Soviet Union were deliberately set in motion, Eclet understood.